This is Grace Lynn Keller with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast, and I'm thrilled today to be joined by David Brown, who is the co-founder and president of medical affairs at the Heart Hospital Baylor Plano. Thank you so much for joining me today, David. Would you please take a moment and introduce yourself?
Hi, Grace. Sure, great to be with you. I'll take a couple minutes and just give you a little bit about who I am and background of how I got here, given the topic we're going to talk about sort of developing, founding, and leading this and how it came about. So I am an interventional cardiologist in Dallas, now at the Heart Hospital that we built and joint ventured with Baylor Scott & White Healthcare System. I am originally from Alabama. I went to West Point and was in the Army for 19 years, did the Airborne Ranger, Jump Master, 82nd Airborne Division, Combat Developments Command, Intelligence Group stuff. And I grew up, my father and family were from Alabama. He was an Army career officer. I grew up as an Army brat before I went to West Point. After West Point, I was, there was post-Vietnam, and I'd just been accepted to Harvard Business School to go do something else. My dad died of a heart attack at 44. And so without knowing what I was doing, I just stopped in my tracks, decided to become a cardiologist without knowing what that was. I didn't know any physicians. I didn't know anything about medicine. And fundamentally kind of got myself plunked into medical school at George Washington, no qualifications to be a doctor or go to medical school. And in that fashion, sort of had this, you know, crazy youthful thing that we think and say of, okay, I'm going to change this. And the idea was fundamentally go figure out what heart attacks were about without knowing. And how do you change one life at a time by figuring out and stopping heart attacks? So I did that after 19 years in the Army. I got out of the Army and I came to Dallas where we started sort of the interventional cardiology development in the, you know, early in the mid and early 1980s. And everything was sort of on the job training and a little bit of, you know, by feel, figuring out what this whole endeavor and field was. And obviously, everyone's seen the explosion of what interventional cardiology and all the offshoots of cardiology have been now over the past 35 years, three or four decades. Excuse me. So fundamentally, we went into private practice. We didn't really want to be in a university or an academic setting. We wanted to go do things, and we wanted to go build a practice that the focus was on quality patient experience and outcomes, but basically could we get to the best outcomes? And so we were at a couple of hospitals trying to do that. And that's kind of where we got to the topic of your whole conversation.
That's wonderful. It sounds like you have a very well-versed experience in, you know, what you're doing, and you just have so much experience behind you all the way from the beginning of your education. And you also set me up great for this first question. So can you tell us about how you founded this Heart Hospital and your experience in those early days and then growing it into what it is today?
Sure, Grace. I mean, it's a terrific question. It's a terrific perspective too. And as time goes along, it's some of it you even start to forget and you wonder, was it really like that? But as we touched on a minute ago, you know, we were in exciting times in cardiology, particularly in the late 80s and the 1990s. And we tried to do a lot of things. And by we, I mean, my partners initially that were cardiologists. And then as we acquiesced things, we were in a private practice setting where we wanted to pull these things together, pull our surgeons together. And fundamentally, we became partners without mixing the groups initially. And we, in the 1990s, fundamentally had the predecessor of the heart team. We didn't call it the heart team. We didn't know it was the heart team. But it was two of my surgeons and me leading this movement that fundamentally said, what's the best care for the patient? How are we going to do this? And most of our colleagues and friends across the country, and most of the places we knew were in pretty good staged battles between cardiologists, surgeons, vascular surgeons, even interventional radiologists, fighting over everything that was happening from stents to peripheral intervention to carotid stenting to AAA aneurysms and stent grafting. And instead of doing that, we came together and tried to figure out how can we do this collaboratively, particularly if it's headed towards the best outcome. And we got, you know, this, we just got put in front of us in a way that we wanted to ensure that we could have the best patient outcome for every patient. And as that developed, we got better and better at it. And in private practice, we started doing our own research trials that led to essentially national recognition and development of national trials. Well, throughout all this, the problem that we encountered was the hospitals and the hospital systems weren't necessarily so inclined to drive in the same direction we were for having the highest quality people in the entire environment and having control of quality over physicians and who can do what and who can't do what, hiring the best nurses both day and night and having, you know, nurses at night who, you know, speak English and can do all the things you would expect them to do. So there was this unrest as we developed this. And at the time, you or many listeners will know there was a movement by a company called Medcath that was developing this concept of joint ventured physician-owned hospitals across the country. And we thought, this may be the object of how we can accomplish the goals that we want in not only quality outcomes, but also surrounding the patient with what you would like to have if your mother, father, sibling, grandparents, spouse had to go into the hospital and had, you know, significant heart disease or particularly life-threatening heart disease, and how would you want to be treated? So after the turn of the century, as this unfolded, I was fortunate enough to get contacted by a consultant who helped me clarify some of the thinking. And the understanding I developed was we could go and build a specialized heart hospital that was a little bit like the Pep Boys. That's all we did. We would fix hearts, and we would do it in the best way possible. And we would surround it by a couple of things of paying a little bit more for infrastructure, building the best hospital that you possibly could, paying the staff a little bit more, and realizing that if you do everything the right way, the rest of it will take care of itself. Well, it was a pretty big myth and a pretty big belief, especially in health, in healthcare, and especially where cost always seemed to be difficult to ascertain and see and understand what, you know, the big chains and big healthcare systems were doing. But we studied it enough, we became convinced that we could make a better mousetrap and build this with, you know, sometimes at the time, some people thought I had silly thoughts of, look, we are going to build, for lack of a better word at the time, in tongue in cheek, a Ritz-Carlton Heart Hospital. We're going to build it so it feels like that when you're there. We are going to hire staff so they treat you like that when they're there. You treat your family like that. They do whatever you need. And I'm used to make the joke, they'll go pick up your laundry and get your dog and do whatever else if your wife's there and you're having surgery. And as we approached this, it became more believable to us that this was something that fed on itself. And although everybody gets paid the same, we believed that if we could prevent complications and if we could prevent mortality, if we could just have the best care after the operation, we had a chance to do better than anybody else on outcomes, and that would make up for the lost money. Well, there's an element where, you know, you don't really know what you're doing, but fundamentally that's exactly what happened. And as we opened, this started as a small concept of a 56 bed community hospital. We didn't really want to be tied down with some of the attributes of being a university or academic center and all the overlaying levels of administration and complications. And we wanted to have a real say in the direction of this. One of the healthcare systems in Dallas, Baylor Scott & White, had a executive vice president named Gary Brock, who believed in us, who believed in this aspect of physician development. And after a year of talking about it and negotiating, we formed a joint venture that became a 50-50 joint venture with Baylor Scott & White that has made this extraordinarily successful. So we opened in January of 2007. We've been open for 14 years. And it is careful what you wish for, because we have had a greater say in these things than we ever imagined. And in that process, together with Baylor, and particularly with the Heart Hospital president that we hired over 17 years ago, or over 15 years ago, sorry, this hospital has grown into now a 108-bed hospital. We now are the third largest cardiovascular surgery volume in the country out of 1,200. We do a little over 2,000 open hearts a year. And we now have over 100 clinical active research trials in cardiovascular medicine. And some of the success begets success. And in the past 5 years, we've kind of turned into what I started out by us not being, and that is a teaching center. So we now have cardiology residents, we have cardiovascular surgery residents, we have vascular surgery residents, we have structural heart fellows, and we are starting this summer with our first class of interventional cardiology fellows and electrophysiology fellows. So this enormous growth led us to following this mantra that I basically set out for our partners in 2003, 17 years ago, that said, quality wins. That's all we're going to focus on. If you believe quality wins, you want to be part of this and you want to participate in it. If you do not believe that you have to ignore everything else and let quality win, you don't want to do this. And you certainly don't want to write a check to be part of this. So we have had our last three strategic retreats before COVID that I titled Zero Mortality, and then Zero Mortality 2 and Zero Mortality 3.0. And it's really about aiming for zero mortality in cardiac surgery and relatively straightforward things like isolated CABG, isolated AVR, isolated mitral valve repair replacement, and the things that are managed by STS in terms of that. And after a number of years, our surgeons thinking, well, David, this is heart surgery, people die. All of a sudden, a year came where somebody didn't die. And the simple question was, well, how'd you do that? And it was, well, you told us to. And I tell that long story just to say, this was a self-fulfilling prophecy that the more we paid attention to quality, to the people, and putting them together in that fashion with respect and loyalty, the more it continued to fulfill itself. So, Grace, I took a lot more bite of your question, I think, than we really started out to be, but I got going and I just didn't want to stop where the story was tellable.
No problem at all. It's fantastic to hear, you know, how much you've grown and started out so small, and then just continued to become this bigger, greater institution. Now you're teaching, and you have this great initiative where you are seeing zero mortality and you're making sure that you are doing everything possible to ensure that. It's just fantastic. Moving into the next question I have for you, which is kind of along the same vein, what are you seeing changing within heart hospitals over this last 15 years that you've been working?
Yeah, so, and that's part of what my apology was, as you saw, I knew I was wading into the next question of, you know, what have we seen over that past 14, 15 years? What have we seen change and what's the evolution? You know, it's, I was thinking about it before, and the fact is, the cardiovascular world has continued to become more technological.
and innovation has continued to accelerate on this exponential growth curve. So the things that we started out with, you know, 20 years ago, in many respects are either very different, somewhat different, or didn't even exist then. I think, you know, again, most people know, listening to this, transcatheter aortic valve replacement. And TAVR has been a complete change in the entire science of cardiovascular medicine. And it's had a major impact on leading heart programs all across the country and across the world in doing that, where, you know, we went from 20 years ago of cutting your chest open to now fundamentally with a needle stick in the groin, we can replace your aortic valve in 20 minutes with no incisions anywhere on your body. And that's real, and that's gone through more trials, more testing, more publications, more literature than any other event in cardiovascular medicine. I don't know enough to say any event in medicine, but it is so well documented, so well published, so well studied, so well data analyzed. It's an amazing science in itself. And it was the vanguard of this whole revolution in structural heart that has taken with us now the mitral valve and the same process leading down that path, the tricuspid valve that we've started on. The aortic valve process, I used to say, was about a 20-year ball game. And what that says is we're in about the seventh inning of it. We're arguably in, you know, the first, maybe second inning of the mitral valve game. And that could easily be more like a 25 or 30-year runway. And we're now, you know, putting our toe in and diving into tricuspid, which is a funny way parallels mitral and may wind up having a little shorter or a little longer runway, and maybe not be as complicated, but different. And we see this same thing happening in the coronary space, in the vascular surgery space, where we become much more minimally invasive to non-invasive and able to fix things percutaneously. The same thing in electrophysiology. And if you, you know, if you take the last 50 years, the changes are dramatic, and we could talk forever about it. If you just take the past 20 years I'm talking about, it's fundamentally, you know, what we're talking about there. And we, you know, we've reached a point where there are things like during COVID, we reached a point where we had four different national trials for experimental tricuspid valve devices to be done percutaneously without surgery. So this evolution, you know, is hitting its prime all across the spectrum of cardiovascular space. So that's certainly, I think, probably the biggest look and the biggest see in clinically in the changes of cardiovascular care in the heart hospital.
Well, that's awesome. It sounds like there's just so much innovation happening, and COVID too probably has moved that along, as a lot of people have seen with their technology and their innovation. So that's fantastic. So I have one more question for you, and this is kind of shifting gears from the heart hospital to your own personal career and experience, but could you maybe talk about some pieces of advice that you would give to emerging healthcare leaders?
I would, Grace. I really appreciate that question, and I think it's probably the key to, you know, all the things that we've talked about. I think the first thing that I would throw up there is that fundamentally it's about the people, and you have got to develop a rhythm, your own understanding of how you engage people, how you interface with people, how you quite frankly use people, and, you know, find a way to make them self-actualize to the highest level that they can. For me, one of the things that makes that critical is the aspect of leading from the front. Don't ask them to do something that you won't do yourself, and do it in a better way. And it's the classic military example of, you know, who's going to lead the first platoon, you know, into the desert? And don't try to be a commander sitting back in higher headquarters directing the troops and the forces. And I'll tell you, we found and hired a hospital president administratively, as I said, over 15 years ago, who was this terrific kid back then, who's not a kid anymore, from West Virginia and Ohio State. And he has been dramatic in leading this entire institutional change in our physicians in a way that's almost beyond any hospital administrator. And he's grown up around it. You know, he's been in the same job now for almost 20 years, and that doesn't usually happen or always happen. And then from that aspect of just leadership, my real underlying characteristic or treatment is loyalty. And it is develop loyalty, build that loyalty, then reward that loyalty, and take care of your troops, and take care of your troops at any cost. And if you are open, transparent, and put them first, it is shocking what happens. And it is unbelievable what they will do for you, especially when times are tough. And, you know, that, I mean, there is a real, there's a small and relatively quick example. As we moved into COVID at the Heart Hospital, we got to, you know, late spring, and the world is struggling with what's going to happen, what's happening with jobs, what's happening with life, families, employment, paychecks, careers. And one of the things that we did was we pulled our executive leadership and our physicians together. And it was really easy for the culture we'd built. And the fundamental answer was that we will employ these people for as long as we possibly can in life, not until, you know, something happens or something changes. Until we are bankrupt and we don't have any more money, we are going to keep all these people and their families employed. And that was also in the face of a healthcare system that can't necessarily make that decision. And they were struggling with, well, do we pay benefits for 60 days, or do we keep, you know, layoffs held off until the end of May or end of June? And, you know, the loyalty that we had demonstrated to our physician partners, to our troops, basically led to this conclusion that, you know what, we will use every last dollar we have, whatever that takes, through the end of this year, through the end of next year. If we can keep the doors open, we're keeping everybody here. And that was probably the highlight of my year, Grace.
Well, thank you so much for that insight, and just the thoughts have been so inspiring. And I think any emerging healthcare leaders who are listening right now will definitely be able to take that information and your experiences to heart. So thank you so much for that. And I am all out of questions for you. So thank you so much for joining me today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thanks for having me, Grace. I hope it was helpful.